Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Merciful, the Compassionate, all praises to Allah, the Creator of the universes and their Sustainer, the Provider of believers and unbelievers. And may His choicest blessings be in the seal of His prophets, the last of His messengers and His holy progeny. Glorified is Allah, who in His holy book, in chapter 86, verse 203 says, وَمَا أَدْرَاكَ مَطَّارِقَ النَّجْمُ الثَّاقِبُ. Yesterday we went through our discussions on the black holes and the various ayats of Quran about the dim stars and the darkened stars and the piercing stars. What was left out was just one matter about the piercing star, about which I had already discussed the material. How is it a piercing star and why is it a piercing star? We went through all that, but what I could not reach doing and moved on to Masail was to give you the Quranic reference, because Quran, as I said, talks about the piercing star. Quran was the first to talk about piercing star, which was not known before at all. So the youth is entitled to ask exactly where in the Quran is it. That reference was omitted yesterday, and I with his own knowledge and with his own mind. And I hope I will revert back to these qualities of Allah in due course. But you can see how proud he is, how satisfied he is that this piercing star was created. And indeed, it was created for a specific cause, as we discussed yesterday. He sets it out in that beautiful way. What is this sort of expression? Whenever he wants to emphasize the point very much, like Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Inna anzalnahu fi laylatil qadr, wama adraka ma laylatul qadr. When he wanted to emphasize about that night with such high qualities, laylatul qadr, khayrun min alf shahr, one night superior to 1,000 nights, to 1,000 months, not nights, to 1,000 months. Well, when he wanted to emphasize that sort of a situation, express the importance of that sort of a night, he used that expression, وَمَا أَدْرَاكَ مَا لَيْلَةُ الْقَدْرِ. And there are a number of other examples in which Allah Ta'ala uses that expression to emphasize the point or to illustrate the importance, the magnitude of the subject that he wants to discuss. That is the style he adopts in this particular matter with a piercing star, which he does not do with the dimming of the star or the big darkening of the star. He talks about them as a matter of fact. فَإِذَا النُّجُومُ تُصِنَتْ, when the star becomes dark. Deals with it as a matter of fact. When it comes to the piercing one, he says, وَمَا أَدْرَاكَ مَطَارِقَ النَّجْمُ الثَّاقِبُ. Then what shall I tell you about the night star? The star that is a piercing star, النَّجْمُ الثَّاقِبُ. So Allah Ta'ala deliberately, it appears, is taking steps, taking action to educate the Ummah, to educate men about these stars. In a way, before I move on to the subject that I really wanted to discuss, the subjects rather that I really wanted to discuss tonight, just one passing comment. In a way, it is a matter of regret. Although we have only ourselves to blame for this, it is a matter of regret that these matters which Allah glorified and exalted wanted to give prominence to, wanted to bring to the knowledge and attention of humanity, remained in darkness. And man remained in ignorance of all these facts until the Western world took greater action, and until recently, in the last half a century or so, that we have come to learn about Najm al-Saqib, and we've come to learn about all these other stars. Well, when we look at the lives and teachings of A'imma alayhi salam, starting from Hazrat Amir alayhi salam himself, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam talked about these stars. No attention was given to it. They were busy with the question of Khilafah. They were quite busy with the political themes of the time.
There are those
who even today call the Battle of Karbala a political issue, when there was no politics in it at all, when it was really a question of saving Islam from the hands of a person who was a diehard enemy of Islam. But this is the sort of situation, the politicizing of religion that kept on taking place, which took attention away from Tawheed, took attention away from the creations of Allah, and importance was being given to mundane matters. Hazrat Amir alayhi salam talked about it in his sermons. Attention was not paid. Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam talked about these things even in Sayyidina Kamila. One finds references to these stars. And then one finds that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, particularly in his speeches, that I have given occasion to mention about them, although just in one majlis in that year, we had finite and devoted one full majlis to his teachings of scientific matters. He of course was more explicit, and notes were taken because he had students there who were taking notes. Those notes traveled. They traveled to Spain, and from Spain they got into the Western world, and the Western world was able to look at them. Until today, they have published theses on them. It is a matter, in a way, of shame and in a way of satisfaction, that it is these Western universities who have researched on sayings and teachings of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, and they have issued papers. They have issued seminar papers, they have issued books on what Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says. But it is amazing that in respect of each one of them, what I have been trying to do for the last two nights, and I hope I'll continue to do for the coming week, trying to show that the knowledge that Quran gives was not there at all. Therefore it must be knowledge from Allah glorified and exalted. They reach that stage. They reach up to the stage of saying that yes, this knowledge did not exist then. Man did not know. Even if we were to say that the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, was taught by some other human being, they cannot name another human being who had this knowledge. So it goes back to the fact that it must be Allah glorified and exalted who taught these things. And Quran therefore must be authentic. Quran therefore must be the word of Allah, because there was nobody else who could have said all this that we are discussing. And we will discuss more tonight inshallah. Well, those scientists, there are those scientists who are prepared to make the admission. And I named Khada, I named Kaizi yesterday and the day before to his substantiate that they became Malaysian Chinese scientists. When presented with these facts, became Muslims. But there were those, particularly European scientists, who were baffled. They had to admit that nobody knew this. How could the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, have known this? But when it was put to them that this must therefore be the word of God, they say, yes, that is a theory in which you believe, but did not become Muslims. But were obliged to accept that this is knowledge that we cannot understand. Then when pressed to ask, how did the Sadiq alayhi salam know this then? How did the Holy Prophet come to know this? Says, well, we can only say he was a genius. And he left it at that. But it is a glory to Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam that the hardcore enemies of Ahlul Bayt, not ordinary enemies, but hardcore enemies, in other words, enemies who actually caused their death, became obliged to accept that these personalities were men of highest knowledge, and that, and this is the more important part, because the fact that they had knowledge, everybody accepted, friend or foe, but it was that the knowledge they had was a knowledge of a level that nobody else at that time had. And this is what we say is the criterion of determining who is an imam, who is a prophet, and who is not. Apart from this question of knowledge, they had to admit, and this is equally important in a discussion of science, they had to admit that these people were not only highly knowledgeable imams alayhi salam, but they were men of taqwa, they were men of piety, and they were at such level of piety that there was no person more pious than them. Such people therefore would have no reason to lie. Such reasons people therefore were people whose word you could trust, that that information was given in honesty. Scientific researchers, we have great respect for them, but they have their own axe to grind in whatever they do. These people of that level of piety transmitted knowledge out of sheer honesty, out of sheer duty to Allah, glorified and exalted, that Allah had appointed them, their agents on earth, to serve the creatures of Allah. And they regarded it as part of their service to communicate this knowledge and information. Otherwise, they were not fighting for Khilafah. They were happy to remain in their homes. Al-Baqir alayhi salam and Al-Sadiq alayhi salam were happy to remain in the Masjid al-Nabawi and teach all these matters to the public and bring it to their notice and encourage their students to make notes, in the knowledge that whilst the political situation at that time meant that the information they were giving the viewers was not being fully absorbed and not being fully utilized, a time might come, if there is record to which people can turn, a time might come when others might take advantage of it, and through that advantage we would benefit. Reminds me of that hadith of the Holy Prophet himself, peace be upon him and his progeny, which says, take knowledge from whatever source you get, even if it is a Kafir who gives you that knowledge. Because know that as you take knowledge from him, you are only taking your heritage from a person who has been able to obtain it without your permission. So how does it become our heritage? Only by proof of the fact that when they were teaching us, they were teaching us knowing that it was Allah's will, that it is knowledge that must reach us. We thank Allah. And I do not want to part from these sessions without doing this. And let it be done even at this early opportunity of these sessions. We thank Allah, and I hope I will do this again in the last night too. We thank Allah that if we have not been able to discover these things ourselves, He has given that knowledge to those who were able to make this research and to be able to give us knowledge by which we can understand His holy verses centuries after they were revealed. The first set of ayat of Quran that I wanted to deal with tonight relates to the sun and the moon, and you must have seen from our agenda it's that subject that we wish to discuss next, difference between sun and the moon. Sun and the moon were two objects that were very well known at the time. In fact, they were very well known even before the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny. That altercation which Nabi Ibrahim had with Namrud, that altercation which Nabi Musa had with Fir'aun, when Fir'aun says to Nabi Musa, what God are you propagating about? I am the God, and Nabi Musa says, well, if you are the God, then my Allah is able to give life and take away life. And Fir'aun says, I can do that. He couldn't. But he claimed falsely. And there is falsity in their argument. He says, I can give life, and that so and so is already convicted of murder. He is to be executed. I order that he should not be executed. I've given him life. He is to die, I've given him life. Well, he hasn't given him life. He has not given him life at all. Allah had ordained that he should live that much longer, and he just spared him to live that much longer. If Allah had ordained that person should die on the spot, he would have died on the spot before the order of Fir'aun could even be executed. But Allah gave him chance, gave him the opportunity to continue with what he was doing. And when Allah gives this opportunity, it is not a favor of them. وَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا إِنَّمَا نُبْلِي لَهُمْ لِخَيْرٌ لِأَنْفُسِهِمْ إِنَّا نُمْلِي لَهُمْ لِيَزْدَادُوا إِثْمًا وَلَهُمْ عَذَابٌ مُهِينٌ. This is an ayah of Quran that Bibi Zainab alayhi salam recited to Yazid in the course of Yadid, when she made her speech, so famous speech of Bibi Zainab alayhi salam, she quoted this particular ayah and put it across to Yadid. The ayah says that let not the non-believers think, and that is surround also included in, that when we give them opportunity, when we give them latitude, when we give them a long rope, we do so for their good, that we like them, or they've done some good for which we give them this opportunity. We only give them opportunity so that they keep multiplying their oppression, they keep multiplying their false claims, for which they would become eligible for punishment. And what is waiting for them on the day of judgment is azabun muheen, very severe chastisement for the wrongs that they kept perpetuating in themselves. This is what Yazid was doing, and this is what Ibn Zainab alayhi salam told her. But this is exactly what Fir'aun was doing. Before I complete that episode of Fir'aun, I might pause here for good reason and say that that ayah is not for us. It is for ya ayyuhallazina kafaru, those who have not brought faith on Allah and the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. So it does not concern us. But we can take lessons from it, because Allah gives us opportunity also. And whatever opportunity Allah gives us, whatever time He gives us in this world for various reasons, we must make full use of it. Because if we do not make use of it and miss the opportunity, we might find that we are not able to pile up sawab. The ayah talks of piling up sins. We want to pile up sawab. That opportunity therefore that Allah gives us, we must take it order to pile up sawab, so that by the time we go, we do not go empty handed. And we carry that which we can carry. Money we cannot carry, but charity that we have given with that money, we can carry with us. And we can carry it in large sums. We cannot carry the ordinary running around we do, but the standing and kneeling and sijda in salah, we can carry with us. The sound that we keep, we can carry with us. The love of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, which we manifest in this world, we can carry with us. And that is not only for the benefit of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. They do not need it. There are angels Allah has created who respect them and revere them now, even in these days, and obey them and fulfill their wishes. But the idea of us loving Ahlul Bayt is only for one reason, and it is this: that when you love somebody, you want to imitate him. You want to act as he acts. If he does not like intoxicating drinks, you do not take intoxicating drinks. If he does not like lies, you do not lie. Such is human nature, that you emulate the people you love. Therefore Allah makes us love Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, because in Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, He has kept pure virtue. He has kept pure actions. For them He has said, innakum wa yutahhirakum tatahira. He says He has purified you with a complete purification. Innama yuridu Allahu liyudhiba ankum ar-rijs ahlul bayt. It is the wish of Allah that He should cleanse you of all impurities. So you can imagine how pure they are, if they are cleansed of all the impurities. And not only that they are clean, but when you say, here comes that the hero, purified to the extent to which they reach the peak of purification. When He purifies them, He then puts their love in our hearts. He asks us to love them, because in loving them we emulate them. It is easy to talk about high principles and to say that we should follow high principles. It is difficult to practice. Love is what makes us follow them more easily, more conveniently, out of our own feelings for Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Then we will not drink because we will say, no, this is something they abhor. We will not fail to say our prayers because we will say they used to recite 1,000 rakat every night. It is that feeling that Allah wishes to inculcate in us, because Allah does not do anything in vain. Allah, that those who created enmity with Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam not only harmed themselves but harmed the Ummah. Because this knowledge that we now are getting centuries later could have been received in those days, and they could have thought about these things more openly, more satisfyingly and more convincingly. However, when Fir'aun speaks this nonsense to Nabi Musa alayhi salam and says, "So he is convicted and I will save his life, and another person is not guilty, I can order that he should be killed," and he is killed immediately. Now that is not Godhood. That is not divinity. Because punishing somebody who is not guilty is a sin by itself. Divinity signifies absolute purity. How can that God do justice if he is not just himself? And this is a crucial point on Adala of Allah. In our usul, it is mandatory to accept that Allah is just. There are those Muslims who do not think that it is necessary that Allah should be just. Why? Because they say, "Oh, he is powerful, so he can do what he likes." True, he can do what he likes. Innahu ala kulli shayin qadir. But because of his purity, he will not do, even if he can, he will not do that which is wrong. Because wrong is not within his personality. Wrong is not within his way of life. What is within his way of life is only haqq. Is only haqq. And we will come to that. We will come to that in this very ayat that we are next going to consider. However, when he says this, and Nabi Musa thought there was no point in discussing this aspect further with him, turns round to him and says, "Fir'aun, my Allah raises the sun from the east and sets it in the west. You try raising it in the east and setting it in the west. Then I will know that you are my Allah and not my Allah." And Fir'aun failed altogether. He became dumbfounded. He changed the subject of the discussion. But you can see that even when a prophet who is an ultimate prophet reaches a level of discussion with a tyrant, with a despot like that, employment of scientific arguments of that nature won the day. Tawheed of Allah, divinity of Allah, the ultimate power and authority and creation of Allah is established through these scientific arguments that we regurgitate and which we emphasize and which Quran emphasizes. And it is amazing how Quran emphasizes all these matters. Next week, inshallah, we shall discuss Qiyamah more closely from the scientific angle as set out in the Holy Quran. But I was talking about the sun and the moon, and I was saying that everybody knew this. Even in those days they were known. And I brought in this hadith of Nabi Musa with Fir'aun to show that the sun and the moon were known at that time very well. But the tragedy was that from time immemorial, both the sun and the moon had myths about them. And as I said yesterday, we have myths even till today. And the newspapers continue these myths by giving us stars and telling us how our day will pass. And there are friends I know who in the morning will get their newspaper only to look at the stars, because they feel that their day will go according to what those stars say, which is not the truth of the matter at all. These stars perform their own functions as we are discussing in these cities. So there are many myths about the stars and many myths about the sun. Dr. Bouquet, in his book on science and Quran, says, well, not science and Quran only, but because he's also discussing Bible in that book, he says that when you look at the Bible, there are these myths included in the Bible also. When you look at the Holy Quran, it is only discussing facts. There is no myth in it at all. It is only facts that are set up, and facts that are absolutely accurate. Absolutely accurate. For example, he says that when the Bible talks about the sun and the moon, the Bible talks about the greater light of the sun for the day, to govern the day. And the lesser light of the moon to govern the night. The night requiring lesser light, as it were, than the day. But it talks about the greater light and greater light and the lesser light only because it is more shining. Now, it is not my subject to talk about the Bible or to talk about Christianity. I know it's been done in other by other speakers around the world, but it's not my subject. Certainly not for these 10 nights. And I'm not out to criticize any religion at all. I only want to say this as a statement for a layman. It is not easy to swallow it because there are cloudy days. Now on a cloudy day, there isn't the greater light of the sun. You can have a cloudy day followed by a full moon night, and the lightest night may be greater than the light during the day. But that is not the true function of the sun and the moon. When one looks at the sun and the moon, of course, there is a difference between the sun and the moon because the sun is larger than the moon. The sun is so many times greater than the earth. The moon is only about 27% of the mass of the earth, about a quarter of the size of the earth. It is the moon of the earth. It is subservient to the earth. Well, but apart from that, there is one major difference. The sun gives light itself. The sun is a body. Is a body of huge gas. It's a spinning mass, because the sun also does two things as the earth does, and we discussed this last year, so I will go through this pretty quickly in a matter of seconds. The sun rotates on its axis, and it also revolves round the sun and moves towards a destination. Do you remember that ayah of Qur'an that we discussed? وَالشَّمْسُ تَجْرِي لِمُسْتَقَرٍ لَهَا. And the sun is moving towards its definite destination, Hercules. We mentioned that is the destination according to the scientists. That is the destination towards which the sun is moving at a high speed. And it is also revolving and it is also rotating. But it is, what is rotating? What is the sun? It is not like the earth. The sun is in it is really a huge mass of very hot gas, mostly hydrogen. But whilst it is this big mass, it does not burn like fire. The atoms of hydrogen within itself combine to create the helium gas, and that is what produces energy. And that is exactly how the hydrogen bomb works. Hydrogen in it producing helium, exploding, produces energy of a vast level. In fact, scientists say that, and I'm only saying this as a matter of information, not relevant to the Holy Quran, but as a matter of interesting information and as a matter to show the magnificence of Allah glorified and exalted. Scientists say that in 1 second the sun produces energy which we would need 3 billion generators to produce in 1 year. If 3 billion generators of ours, of human generators, produce energy for a full year, that much quantity of energy is produced by the sun in 1 second. And that is why it has to be so far away from us, 93 million miles, 150 million kilometers away from us, otherwise it could burn us. And yet we cannot do without it. This is what I said last year about Big Bang. If the Big Bang did it, it will be all in a disorderly, chaotic manner. But the way the sun is kept away from us, so much so, that if it came a little closer, it would scorch us. If it went a little further behind, it would freeze us. But that accuracy cannot be attained in a chaotic way, in a disorderly way. It can only be attained if there was a creator who created it deliberately on plan and created it with knowledge, with power, with might. As Allah Himself calls Himself, وَهُوَ الْعَزِيزُ الْحَكِيمُ, when He deals with matters of creation. And he deals, and when he deals with matters of creation, one finds that he even takes an oath, as we saw yesterday, in respect of the stars. Qasamun azim. He says it's a big oath when he took that oath in respect of the stars. That is the way the sun works, and that is the amount of energy the sun is able to produce. And if we are talking of that creator, then science tells us, I do not have that figure from the holy book, but science tells us that that sun has been producing that kind of energy for 4 billion years. Can you imagine how gigantic that Allah must be? Can you imagine how fantastically, tremendously great he must be to produce? And I'm only talking of a sun that is called middle class. It's a middle class star. So can you imagine how much more energy the massive stars must be producing? The star around which the sun revolves, how huge and great that star must be, and how huge therefore that Allah must be. One can easily understand how Imam Hussain alayhi salam would say that if in order to save your name, to save my religion, my body was to be torn into... We keep talking about these things in Messiah. And we talk about these things in Messiah to weep over Imam Hussain alayhi salam. But now when we are not in Messiah, let us look at that statement in isolation. Let us look at it purely intellectually, without emotion involved in it. One can understand a person of the knowledge of Imam Hussain alayhi salam saying that if your name, if you are so great as I know you to be, and if your name is only going to be saved if Yazid were to murder me, otherwise he will destroy your name, then if my body is to be cut into pieces, he could have said, if I am going to be killed, I am ready to be killed now. I come to Awlali, and if my children are going to be made yatim, I am happy about that. He could just have said that in sweeping words or like that. But he's saying that if my body is going to be cut into pieces, I am happy to provide that, and I am happy that swords should now confront me, that arrows should put me into, tear me into pieces, if your name is going to be saved. And if that is going to happen, my heart is not going to turn away from you even for an iota of a second. Well, that shows the extent of the knowledge of it. And these are not words that he says when he is delivering a speech in cool blood. He is saying this when he is about to be martyred, when he is already full of wounds, 1,800 wounds in one body. And no exaggeration of fear, this figure doesn't come from us, it comes from them, it comes from the army of Yazid. They counted these wounds, and do you know why they counted these wounds? Why was it necessary for them? They had already killed Imam Hussain alayhi salam. All they wanted was to take the head of Imam Hussain alayhi salam to Yazid. But they counted these wounds in order to tell Yazid, we inflicted so many wounds, therefore our price from you must be that much higher. They did it purely for money. They were mercenaries to the hilt. And Yazid did not give them a penny. They did not get a penny out of Yazid. In fact, they were humiliated. And ultimately, Mukhtar got hold of each one of them, as you know, and we've already discussed it about 10 years ago in one of the sessions in this very hall. Mukhtar killed them all. They died as Imam Hussain alayhi salam warned them, khizyun fi dunya wal azab fi al-akhirah. In humiliation in this earth, on this earth, and azab waiting for them. Well, but Imam Hussain alayhi salam was therefore a man who knew the sun that well, and he knew the other suns that existed in the firmament. That is the sun we are talking about, and that sun therefore produces that energy. It produces two energies, as you know. It produces heat and it produces light. It gives us light and it gives us heat. In other words, it satisfies our requirements. We will come inshallah to discussing photosynthesis. We have discussed photosynthesis and I do not propose to repeat myself. I will only touch on photosynthesis again to show you the ayat of Quran on that particular point, because that we did not discuss last year, the actual verses of the holy book. Because there is no knowledge to be acquired superior than the study of Quran. That is the book that Allah says, لَقَدْ جَاءَكُمْ بُرْهَانٌ مُبِينٌ وَنُورٌ. I have given you through this book convincing truth and light. Light to lead us to the straight path. Calls the book Noor by itself. But he calls the moon the Noor. The reality, as we know today scientifically and incontrovertibly, the sun produces light itself and gives us light. The moon does not produce light. The moon only reflects light. The light of the sun which falls on the moon reflects, and it is a very poor reflector also. It does not reflect even a quarter of the light that, according to some theories, it only reflects 7% of the light that is thrown on it by the sun. Only 7% of that is thrown back into space by the moon. But all it does is to reflect back onto us the light that it gets from the sun. It does not produce light. Now, when the Bible says that greater light and smaller light, that is basically inaccurate, because the moon does not produce light at all. This is one of the problems when a book of Allah is kept aside and it is substituted by a translation. Because Injil was not in English. We do not know where it is. I haven't seen a copy of Injil. I haven't met anybody who has. Now this is the great pity of the people who want to follow the word of Nabi Isa alayhi salam. They do not have the original book. They rely on a translation made by emperors. And you know what happens when emperors undertake tasks like this? There is political axe to grind in these translations. And that is why I keep saying, I certainly do this in Stanmore, because I do not know if this disease is coming into India or not, so I do not know whether it's relevant to you. But only in the context of the point I was making, may I say this, that I keep saying translation is vital. We cannot keep reading Quran in Arabic if we don't understand Arabic. What am I doing now? I'm reading the Quranic words in Arabic, but I'm translating them. Because how can we benefit from those words if we cannot translate them? If we do not understand them in the language in which we understand. Hence the English majlis. If we do not understand them fully in the language which we do understand, what is the point of just reading it? Yet it is vital that we must maintain the Arabic Quran. It is vital that we must learn to read that Arabic even if we can't understand. And it is vital that we should continue reading it. All our marajia have said, and I know no exception in this, that reading translation has great thawab in it. All of them said that. But all of them have said that when the ahadith from Allah through the Holy Prophet and Imam, peace be upon them all, come to us to say that there is so much thawab in reciting Quran, reciting for example Surah Waqiyah. The hadith that if you recite Surah Waqiyah every evening, you will never be short of money. You see, the barakah of Quran is so wide. It is not only this knowledge that we are discussing, scientific knowledge. It is also when somebody is sick and you want a remedy for it. And we have discussed Yasin. I have done a full commentary, alhamdulillah, on Yasin in this very hall. The curative effect, Yasin is not to be recited only on dead people. The curative effect, somebody is sick, you go and recite Yasin on him. And Yasin takes a few minutes. Alhamd, surah alhamd. 7 times alhamd has fantastic effect. Somebody loses his job and is looking for sustenance, surah waqiyah. But when all these ahadiths come, these surahs are to be recited in Arabic. They are not to be recited in English. It's not the translation that is to be recited. Then the hadith of reciting a khitna in the holy month of Ramadan, all the marajia say that All that means reciting the Arabic. And this is for a very good reason. It is to preserve the Arabic. It is the preservation of that Arabic that will preserve the word of Allah. Substitute the word of Allah, substitute the word of man for the word of Allah, and you will ruin the whole book. We will deprive ourselves of this salient, satiating knowledge that the Holy Book contains. Because in our translations we will corrupt the original. We will corrupt either for our own political motives, and you know very well that this happens all the time. The tafsir are being changed. Some people don't like Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, ma'azallahi ta'ala. They change the translation of the words about Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam in the Quran. Some people do not understand those words, and hence if their translations are used wrong, as we discussed yesterday, discussed last year, how those words are given wrong meaning quite innocently. Those who make it appear are doing so very innocently, very honestly, but through lack of knowledge they mistranslate. Now if only the translations are left and the original are gone, where are we? But if the original is there, we have chance, we have the opportunity to be able one day to go back to the original and get the true pristine words that Allah nominated. And we see that in what we are going to discuss now. Allah Ta'ala with regard to the sun and the moon say, and I do not wish to make the omission I made yesterday, chapter 78 verse 13, he says, وَجَعَلْنَا سِرَاجًا وَهَاجًا, and we have created a blazing lamp. He calls it a siraj. A siraj is a lamp in Arabic. وَهَاجًا, blazing lamp. But mind you, and you know this as much as anybody else, that a lamp provides light. It is a source of light, and we get the light directly from a lamp. And that is the word Allah Ta'ala uses for the sun. He calls it a lamp that provides heat, as a lamp does. It's a lamp that provides light, as a lamp does. That is what he calls the sun, because the sun, as we have already discussed, creates and provides both light and heat. Then another important ayah is in chapter 25, verse 61, in which Allah Ta'ala says, تَبَارَكَ اللَّهِ, and this is so fantastic. It is so inspiring when you read those words. When it comes to the creation of these things, creation of the sun and the moon, Allah Ta'ala uses words as it were praising his actions. He does not need to, and he does that very seldom. If he started praising himself, oh my Lord, the whole Quran, all the 6,000 ayahs will only be his praises. But he does that very rarely. And you can see when it comes to creation of this nature, he uses that sort of expression, which makes it mandatory on us to read those ayahs, to understand them, and to imbibe them and absorb them. He says, Tabarak Allah, blessed is he, hallowed is he. Tabarak Allah, Ja'ala fi samai buruja, who created in the heavens stars. I keep talking about the stars, although I hope I finish tonight and we move on to other things from tomorrow. But because Allah, glorified and exalted, keeps talking about the stars himself in Quran. They are so important, their creation is so important, and talks about it in so many different surahs, in so many different chapters. So he says, تَبَارَكَ الَّذِي جَعَلَ فِي السَّمَاءِ بُرُوجًا وَجَعَلَ فِيهَا سِرَاجًا. Same word again. And I have created in it a lamp. And then, وَقَمَرًا مُنِيرًا, and a moon. He calls it clearly by the word moon, which is an illuminating moon, munira. It is illuminating, through which you get light. So you can see that Quran does not make the mistake that one finds in Bible. The original Injil never made a mistake, because Injil was from Allah, glorified and exalted. But the Bible we have, the translation has this error in it. That error is not found in the Holy Book, in Quran. Allah calls the sun Siraja, Siha Siraja, and then calls the moon Waqamara Munira. Through the moon you get light. It does not produce light itself. It is not a lamp in its own right. It is only giving us reflected light. That knowledge, by the way, that knowledge, that the sun gives light directly, the moon only reflects the light that it has received from the sun, that knowledge was not known at the time the Holy Prophet recited the ayah. It was then thought that the moon also produces light, when it does not. The moon does not have that capacity at all. It does not have these gases that we talked about. It is not. It is rock, just as the earth is. The constitution is almost very similar. And this is why the first place to which we went, the astronauts went and descended, was the moon, thinking that we would be able to live there, providing ourselves another home, because the world is becoming overpopulated. We are a little too many now, 6 billion already, so we are looking for another home. Looking for another home, the first place we thought we would have a home was the moon, because it is so similar in constitution to the earth. So it does not produce light at all. This fact was not known at that particular point in time. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, however, made this clear, and I have touched on this when we were discussing on Imam Sadiq, that particular difference, without of course discussing these ayats of Quran, which I am now seeking to do. Because we were discussing his knowledge, we were not discussing the connection between science and Quran then, as we now are doing. But Imam Sadiq alayhi salam raised this point and showed the difference to his students between the sun and the moon. But it was not followed up, it was not taken further on, as I said, in the earlier part of the majlis tonight. That knowledge not being there, yet one, when one finds Quran making a difference between the sun and the moon in this way, shows that Quran was written, was delivered by someone who knew the sun, who knew the moon, and knew them when they were created billions of years ago. And who would know them better than the one who created them? Who would know them better than the very one who created them? But the third ayah that I wanted to put across to you from Surah Yunus, chapter 10, verse 5, says, هُوَ الَّذِي جَعَلَ الشَّمْسَ ضِيَاءً. He made the sun, the shams, ضِيَاءً, shining, because it produces light. وَالْقَمَرَ نُورًا. And the moon illuminated. So it is not shining in its own right, because it has no shine in it. It does not produce light to be able to shine. So the word ziya is used entirely for the sun, and it is not used for the moon. And you can see that different words are used for the sun and different words for the moon, because it was important for Allah, glorified and exalted, to make that difference. But then, to complete the promise I made earlier on in this majlis, I'd like to finish that ayah, although it is not directly on the point I'm making. And he says, وَقَدَّرَهُ مَنَازِلَ, and he set stations for both of them, for the sun and the moon. And he created stations for both of them, so that لِتَعَلَمُوا عَدَدَ السِّنِينَ وَالْحِسَابِ, so that you are able to know when the year passes. So even then Allah Ta'ala was saying how one complete revolution of the earth round the sun is a year, one complete revolution of the moon round the earth is a month. So sinin, that is years, but there were calculations other than annual, and so he used the general word hisab, because there was a calculation of the month, the monthly calculation, and the daily one, the night and the day, as the earth rotates on its own axis round the moon and the sun, revolving round the sun. مَا خَلَقَ اللَّهُ ذَلِكَ إِلَّا بِالْحَقِّ. And Allah did not create all this except for truth, for haqq, for a good reason, for a good cause. I cite this to substantiate the point I was making yesterday, that nothing is created. I was really talking about the interstellar activities and how they are affected in the context of the black hole. And I was saying that nothing there is created in vain. Everything is created for a purpose and for a design, and a design that will last. And when it will end, when it will cease, and it will also be ended for a reason, for a cause, which only a superpower like Allah Himself knows and is not going to be challenged by anybody. Nobody will be able to save the sun from dying. Nobody will be able to create another sun as Allah has created. Nobody will be able to interfere with that ultimate power and authority of Allah. And that is what Allah seeks to demonstrate and says it clearly. Ma khalaqallahu dhalika illa bil haqq. We keep reading these words, but these words must be understood in their depth so that we can get the true feel. Not only the true words of Allah, but the true feel of what Allah is seeking to convey to us. Ma khalaqallahu dhalika illa bil haqq. يُفَصِّلُ الْآيَاتِ لِقَوْمِ يَعْلَمُونَ. And Allah elucidates these verses for a community, لِقَوْمِ يَعْلَمُونَ, to a community that has knowledge. Those are very strict words from Allah. They are condemning words, because they say they mean what they say. That this all this information that Allah gives in respect of these stars and the moon and the sun, all to a community that has knowledge. Shall I say, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, shall I say that he is saying he has no time for a community that has no knowledge? It is as damning as that. That a community that does not seek knowledge, he has no time for them at all. Hence the importance that we who seek the proximity of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam would only be able to obtain also proximity of Allah glorified and exalted if we seek that knowledge and attain that knowledge of His creation of all these matters. And if that knowledge is to be attained through scientists, then we get that knowledge too, because primarily it is our heritage. Likewise, the converse is true. Those who did not care for knowledge, those who got knowledge in their own course, the Imams alayhi salam provided the knowledge in their own course. Imam Saleh alayhi salam provided the knowledge in the court of Mansur. Imam Baqir alayhi salam provided that knowledge in the court of Hisham and in the court of Walid. Imam Rawah alayhi salam provided that knowledge in the court of Mahmud. But despite the fact that they got that knowledge, they did not treasure it, they did not follow it up, they did not reveal it to the public. All they were interested in is to ensure that this man who has this knowledge should be killed. He should be killed so that he does not take power from me. He is entitled to power that I am holding. They knew this too well. They knew too well that they were not entitled to Khilafah. They knew too well that the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam were the proper authority for that office. Fearing that the proper authority might take over authority, they were simply out to kill them, but not realizing that in killing them, they were killing knowledge. In killing them, they were killing piety. In killing them, they were killing the entire humanity and the purpose for which Allah glorified and exalted had created them. This is the harm, the extent of the harm they did. If we did not weep over Ahlul Bayt and only wept over the harm that these tyrants and despots did, is enough reason for us to cry on the state of the community today. And this is exactly why Imam Hussain alayhi salam, when he set out from Makkah, from Medina, as I said yesterday, decided even to carry the women, because he knew that the purpose of these people does not finish at killing Hussain alayhi salam. They wanted to kill the very veins and arteries of Islam, so that there is no trace of Islam left altogether. And this is why I keep saying to my non-Shiite friends, that this Azan that we revere from Masjid al-Haram, Allahu Akbar, is really a homage to Imam Hussain alayhi salam. But for that sacrifice, we would not have had this adhan even on Masjid al-Haram or in Masjid al-Nabawi today. It is a homage to Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Let it not be called a political battle, because for Imam Hussain alayhi salam, he had no reason to have conflict at all. Indeed, Imam Hussain alayhi salam tonight is already now the second leaves. Imam Hussain alayhi salam arrives in Karbala, and as you know, he pitched the tent on the banks of Euphrates, by common sense, under the Prophet alayhi salam, the supreme commander there, did this out of common sense. You pitch the tent near water so that water is available to the haram at all material times. And the moment Amr ibn Sa'd la'natullah alayhi arrives in Karbala on the 4th of Muharram, the first order he issues is that these tents be removed from the banks and be pitched so far away, according to Muslims, who was a commentator, a writer in the army of Yazid, according to him, to be flung away so far away that not even the breeze of Euphrates should reach the little children. They should not only be thirsty, but they should not even get the breeze of Euphrates. That far were those tents to be sent. And when that order was given, of course, when the Prophet was infuriated, he said, "I draw the line in sand." And you know what that expression means in Arabic. He drew the line in sand with his sword, saying, "I'm not going to remove this sand, and if anybody tries to cut this line, I will draw my sword and start a battle now." This is exactly what had happened in Siffin. When Imam Ali alayhi salam reached Siffin, he was the first to reach there, and he pitched all his tents along the Euphrates, same river, Euphrates. When Muawiyah comes into Siffin and he sees that, he says, "I can't allow this. I can't allow Ali to have the water. I must have the water, and I must be able to control it, not him, because he will stop water on us." You can imagine how an evil mind thinks evil, even of a pure and pious mind like that of Ali alayhi salam, for whom it is Allah says, "Wayutahhirahum tatheera." Even for that mind, Muawiyah could only think of evil. He thought Imam Ali alayhi salam would deprive them of water, and he sends the message to Ali alayhi salam, as Umar ibn Sa'd did to Imam Hussain alayhi salam, saying, "Remove your tents, and if you do not remove your tents, I will start a battle." Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "Start a battle now if you want, but I'm not removing these tents, because I do not trust you to give me water when I need water. You will want to kill me not through the sword but through water." And Imam Ali alayhi salam refused to. The first battle that was fought in Siffin was a preliminary battle. It was a preliminary battle only on water, and Imam Ali alayhi salam defeated the army of Muawiyah. Muawiyah now, humiliated, sent emissaries to Imam Ali alayhi salam to say, "Ya Ali, you have won, you have got the water. Promise us one thing," because Muawiyah in the heart of his heart knew that if Ali alayhi salam promised, that his promise was written, was the bond of Ali alayhi salam. It was written in gold. It would be honored at all times. "Promise me that when we need water, we will be able to have water." Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Granted." Water, Imam Ali alayhi salam said, in those days in Siffin, is a human right, and no one party is entitled to deprive the other party of water. Whenever Muawiyah wants water, but he wants it for his army or for their families, let him send delegation here. We will make sure that delegation is only coming to collect water, and we will allow them to take water from that very Euphrates in as much quantity as they want. So you can see how Imam Ali alayhi salam, the father of Hussain alayhi salam, dealt with Muawiyah, the father of Yazid. This is how Imam Ali, and throughout that battle of Siffin, water was made available. Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam was in Siffin. He fought in the battle of Siffin. Indeed, when Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam fought in Siffin, Muawiyah, people began to wonder, how is Ali one time
fighting in his true age, one time fighting, looking so young, and Muhammad turns round to them saying, this is not Ali whom we are now fighting, this is his son Abbas. So you can see he fought like Ali in Siffin, and people thought that there was Ali alayhi salam himself. He wouldn't agree. Imam Hussain alayhi salam immediately turned around and says, Abbas, move the tent. And the bellow of Abbas. This actually is a greater power of Abbas than even the battle that Abbas fought. To be able in those circumstances to say that I will obey my Imam, and if Imam tells me to move the tent, I will, was the greatest power that under the Abbas alayhi salam had, out of his mind of an Imam, out of his knowledge of the level of the Imam, and the need of complete and perfect obedience of Imam alayhi salam. He moved the tent, and as you know, the Imam Hussain alayhi salam did not want it to be said it was a political battle. He did not want it to be said that it was a battle for water. And then Imam Hussain alayhi salam turns around to Yazid and to Umar ibn Sa'd in those nights and says, Umar, I give you three options. If I came here because you called me here, and I was letting to prove, but I give you three options. If you like, I will go back to Medina and I will stay at the graveside of my father, not back mingling in politics at all. And if you like, I will go to the farthest point, to the farthest point in the Commonwealth of Islam. Some people have even written that he actually mentioned India. He mentioned Hind. He said, I am prepared to go to Hind. Help the people of Hind. Observe the martyrdom of Imam Hussain. Even with greater power, because they believe Imam Hussain alayhi salam was prepared to come to them to obtain shelter from them. Imam Hussain alayhi salam offered that, and he said, if you are not prepared to accept that, take me alive to Yazid and I will show it out with Yazid himself. And Yazid in charge, he turns to Omar and says, Omar, has not your father told you that the Holy Prophet said, Hussain minni wa ana min al-Hussain? Hasn't the Holy Prophet said, al-Hussain Sayyidu Shababi al-Jannah? Yazid says, yes, he has, oh, this is true that you say. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, what makes you then kill me? He says, only the reward for Yazid. Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, Omar, Yazid will not give you any of these rewards. I promise you that if I am Sayyidu Shababi al-Jannah, I will give you Jannah if you allow me to go scot-free for prayer. And yes, they did not allow Imam Hussain alayhi salam to go. I make these points to show that there was no politics on the part of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. It was pure, genuine compromise, so that Islam is saved, so that his bay'ah does not lead other people to make bay'ah of Yazid, to enable Yazid to destroy Islam. And he has the ultimate martyr, Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Tonight maybe also can be the time to remind you that then Imam Hussain alayhi salam asked for water to the last minute. To the last minute he asked for water, saying, Ya Shemr, Yazidi, Sharbat of Mishasma. Oh Shemr, if you want to kill me, you can kill me, I'm not fighting anymore. But give me water before you kill me. Because Imam Hussain alayhi salam wanted only to establish that he was being killed thirsty. Did Imam Hussain alayhi salam really want water? He knew he would not get water. But he who had seen Akbar die, he said, if he Akbar comes back and says, Father, give me some water. Because if you give me some water, I'll be able to fight more. Hussain says, Akbar, you put me to shame, my dear son. My dear son should come to me and ask for something like water, and I should not be able to give him. He takes a 6-month child. How far would his son go in his humbleness to keep the child on the earth, scolding him, saying, if you don't trust me, Ma'adabai Ta'ala, what words you said have to use? Then give my son water yourself. And what they do is Hormala with a three-pronged arrow. Wasn't an arrow in Hormala, a three-pronged arrow onto the neck of Azhar alayhi salam. Azhar is butchered in that way. That Hussain would know that. Was he going to drink the water? Shimri would give him then. But no, he wanted to establish that he was killed 30 when he landed in Adamin alayhi salam, passing by a shop of a butcher in Medina. He said, "Shout and weep." The butcher says, "Mullah, why are you weeping like this?" He says, "No, butcher, that lamb, that carcass of the lamb, did you give him water before you? Did you give him water before you butchered that carcass?" And the butcher says, "Mawlana, how can I even kill it without first giving water?" Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says, "In Karbala, they killed my father without giving him water." إلا لله وإنا إليه راجعون. رحم الله من يقرأ الفاتحة.